So tonight we're talking about forgiveness. And as I was thinking about these scriptures this week, I realized that I'm not sure I have a whole lot new to say about forgiveness. And so my reflection might seem familiar in spots because it's words I've used before. So you'll have to forgive me.
We forgive you all.
And I think that just as Jesus tells us to forgive from the heart means to forgive 70 times 7, because forgiveness is hard, we have to keep doing it. And I think we need to keep reminding ourselves what we already know. So going over things that we've reflected on in the past about forgiveness is not necessarily a bad thing. I think it can help us to reinforce what we already know about what forgiveness is and isn't. And I want to invite us to just start by thinking about some instance in your life where forgiveness was involved. Perhaps you had to forgive someone who wronged you. Or maybe forgiveness was part of a news story. You see those pop up every once in a while. And think about, if something comes to mind, think about the role that forgiveness played in that event or that story. What role did it play in the life of the one being forgiven? And what role did forgiveness have in the one that was offering forgiveness? Now, you may think of many different stories even. There's many, if you go look, Google it, there are many inspiring stories about forgiveness. But the one that always sticks in my mind, it seems to always come to my mind first, is the event that occurred in 2006 in a Pennsylvania Amish community. If you remember that, a gunman had walked into a one-room Amish schoolhouse and shot 10 little girls, killing 5 of them before he killed himself. And what I find unexpected and amazing after that tragedy was the way that the Amish community who lost their children expressed forgiveness toward the killer and the killer's family. They not only said the words of forgiveness, but they made many gestures of forgiveness to live it out. They went beyond words. They attended the killer's funeral. They donated funds to help his children and his widow. And as we can imagine, forgiveness in the face of that kind of tragedy is not easy. Many in the Amish community had to seek counseling to deal with their grief. Some even endured ongoing nightmares. Jonas Beiler was a therapist that helped that community deal with their pain. And he said that tragedy changes you. You can't stay the same. Now, how it changes you, we don't exactly know, or we won't know ahead of time. But what he found in his experience is that if we bring what little pieces that we have left after a tragedy like that, if we bring those pieces to God, God somehow helps us make something good from it. And he saw that happening in that school shooting. And he said that one simple thing that the whole world got to see was this simple message of forgiveness, that it is possible. Beiler said that because the Amish were able to express forgiveness, because they held no grudges, they were better able to concentrate on the work of their own healing. Forgiveness enables healing, primarily for those doing the forgiving. I think if we can find it in ourselves to forgive, we'll often be the benefactor of that forgiveness. We mostly need to forgive for our own benefit. But I think forgiveness can also be an important part of being community together. It can be an important ingredient in healthy relationships. We often observe, or I often observe in my preaching, how our world needs more love, how we are so divided right now. And if we're to heal ourselves, if we're to have a chance to make the world whole, forgiveness needs to be a part of that healing process. Sometimes it's not just the work of individuals, but like that Amish schoolhouse shooting, forgiveness can sometimes be the necessary work of an entire community. Unfortunately, talking about forgiveness makes us uncomfortable. It's difficult. It's complicated. Dealing with our pain is not a simple thing. And it requires intimacy and vulnerability. It's deeply emotional. The act of forgiving requires facing the ways that we've been hurt, as well as the ways that we've hurt others. Now, people are not inherently bad, but we do mess up both in little ways and in tragic ways. We wrong others. We abuse the earth. We even hurt ourselves. Forgiveness opens us to healing. And that might mean forgiving the one that's hurt us, letting go of our anger and pain so it doesn't control our lives. It might mean forgiving ourselves as well, letting go of guilt and shame from our own failures. When we practice forgiveness, we let go of those unhealthy emotions that can consume us, and we express our desire to be healed. And it can heal not only us, but it can also help heal relationships. When we ask for forgiveness from God and others, it acknowledges and affirms that things don't have to always be the way they have been in the past. While God will always forgive us, we might not get it from the others that we ask. We can't really control that. But asking for forgiveness, offering forgiveness, asking for forgiveness for ourselves, that opens up the possibility of healing relationship. Forgiving and being forgiven is critical for restoring those damaged relationships. It creates fertile ground for growth. It allows us to process and transform our pain. It opens the future where there doesn't seem to be a future, declaring that the past does not dictate what happens next. Forgiveness is an act of courage. It can be difficult to forgive instead of holding on to pain and bitterness. And not only tragic circumstances, but even the little hurts can be difficult to forgive. Forgiveness is about letting go, not only of our own guilt, but when we forgive others, we let go of the anger and resentment that can deaden our spirit. And forgiveness is important for our spiritual health. I think it's really a spiritual practice, just like prayer or meditation, probably with an emphasis on practice. It can take time, even years. And there's been things in my life that it's taken me years to feel like I've reached a point of forgiveness. Jesus tells Peter that we should forgive not once, not seven times, but 70 times seven times. That's 490 times. We're going to lose count. When you lose count, you start over at one. It's an endless abundance of forgiveness. Absolute, complete, beyond counting. When we can't seem to forgive, Jesus is telling us to keep on forgiving anyway, until it wears down the walls of pain, hate, and bitterness. Each time we make an effort to forgive is like taking a hammer to those walls, chipping away a little bit more. And even if they don't come down at first, Jesus tells us to keep forgiving, keep chipping away until the walls are gone, until the way to healing and restoration, reconciliation is clear. Now, we might also want to mention what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not about subjecting ourselves to continued hurt or abuse. In last week's scripture reading, Jesus talked about confronting those who have hurt us. It's not really possible, at least I haven't figured out how, to forgive ongoing abuse. First, it has to stop, and then we can work on healing and forgiveness. Forgiveness is also not about erasing consequences or approving of bad behavior. A victim may forgive a thief, but that doesn't mean they thought it was okay. Nor does it mean that they think the thief doesn't need to feel consequences from their actions. In Jesus' parable, the person who refuses to forgive and instead acts out of vengeance is held accountable for their behavior. Jesus, I think, is telling us that as important as forgiveness is, justice matters too. We still need accountability. And forgiveness is not about hiding our pain either. True forgiveness requires acknowledging our pain, working through it, seeking restoration and healing in the midst of our pain. It is the desire to recognize that the future doesn't have to be controlled by the past. That's forgiveness, to refuse to let pain rule our hearts. And it requires making God's love the ruler of our hearts instead. To forgive 70 times 7 is to practice forgiving until it becomes ingrained in our very souls, until we are truly forgiving from the heart, as Jesus tells us to do. The king in Jesus' parable was ready to forgive a debt of unimaginable proportions, the equivalent in our times to maybe tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars, depending on how you choose to translate those sums in the Greek. But the servant who is forgiven couldn't in turn forgive another who is indebted to him for just a paltry amount. Not being able to extend the forgiveness given to him, the servant then lost the forgiveness and was handed over to be tortured until he was able to repay the debt. Now, as we think about that parable, it always makes me nervous when Jesus has someone being sent off to torture. But I don't think the servant's fate is some kind of warning of eternal punishment or hell. I believe, at least for me, it's a warning of the very real way in which the inability to forgive can torture us. If we let the pain and bitterness of all of the ways that we're hurt in our lives rule us, then we're torturing ourselves. But if we take seriously the need to forgive and keep forgiving until it takes hold in our hearts, if we forgive 70 times 7 times, then we can free ourselves from the grip of the past. We can make possible the restoration of relationship that might otherwise be lost. And we can open the future to new possibilities. And in opening ourselves to the future, to healing and growth, we allow ourselves to become who God created us to be, each in our own unique way. And that connects with what Paul is saying about judging our brothers and sisters. Paul is talking about creating a new social reality that comes into being when we follow Jesus, one that instead of enmity exhibits a commitment to one another. And if forgiveness allows us to be our authentic selves, so too does reserving judgment against each other. I think those two things work hand in hand, reserving judgment and forgiving. And they're both working to create a welcoming community where our uniqueness, our differences are respected and celebrated. Just as forgiveness doesn't mean approving harmful behavior, neither does reserving judgment of each other. The examples that Paul gives of judgment, if you note, are made up of human categorizations that we use to label people as insiders and outsiders. Whether we're vegan or whether we eat meat, whether we think Saturday or Sunday is the holy day. I'm sure we could think of other ways like that, that we divide up into us and them. But the issues that Paul is talking about in this letter to the Romans, at least in this passage, are not real moral failures. They aren't hurting anyone. Part of what Paul, I think, is asking us to do is learn to discern the difference between what matters and what doesn't matter. And stop judging people on what doesn't matter. Paul wants to create a community of welcome where instead of closing ourselves off from each other, from the stranger, from those who are different from us, we welcome the arrival of the other and celebrate their difference. Paul's asking us to love our neighbor without trying to change our neighbor to make them more like us. And when we quit trying to force others to conform, we allow them to become their unique creations, their unique selves, how God made them to be. And at the same time, we free ourselves to do likewise. Forgiving from the heart, refusing to judge each other, two ways that we can build healthy, welcoming community where we celebrate each other and free each other to grow into God, into our own God-given uniqueness. And neither one is easy. Forgiving isn't easy. Reserving judgment isn't easy. They require a commitment to one another, a commitment to community, to relationship, sacred relationship, like we talked about last week. And in making that commitment of loving relationship, we draw closer to each other and to God. And I want to end this reflection with a Buddhist prayer of forgiveness that I know I've shared before, but I think it's wonderful. And it goes like this. If I have harmed anyone in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through my own confusions, I ask their forgiveness. If anyone has harmed me in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through their own confusions, I forgive them. And if there is a situation I am not yet ready to forgive, I forgive myself for that. For all the ways that I harm myself, negate, doubt, belittle myself, judge or be unkind to myself through my own confusions, I forgive myself. Amen. And as we move into our time of reflection, I'd just say one thing I love about that little prayer is the use of confusions. It's not about wrongs. It's implying that when we hurt somebody, it's because we're confused. We've forgotten that we're supposed to be people of love. So it's really about getting back on track.